you're Shakespeare. Start quoting him now. Rush up, you're Shakespeare, and the women you will wow. Just declaim a few lines from Othello, and they'll think you're a hell of a fella. If your part won't respond when you flatter, tell her what Tony told Cleopatra.
Hello, listeners, and welcome once again to the Benny South Street Chronicles. Thanks for tuning in. I'm joined today by the actress and performer, Marisha Ray. That's R-A-Y, am I correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and that's Marisha with an H?
Yes, Marisha.
Marisha, okay.
With
Because yes. I also know a Marissa.
Right.
And you two are like right next to each other and myself. If you ever get any texts from me where it seems like I'm trying to get in your pants, it's probably for her.
Noted. Okay. Good. Or I'll just write it off as drunk texting.
There you go. So, Marisha, we met when we were both performing at the LA Connection Theater in Sherman Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an improv-based theater.
Yes.
How long were you doing improv?
I did improv over at LA Connections for about 6 months-ish. Mm-hmm. Which is where I met you. And a lot of really great people over there. A lot of people I still work with today. But I've been doing improv since I was in, like, high school. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, 5 or so years, probably off and on, not really with a steady troupe. But every once in a while we would do a show, you know, normally a group of my other fellow actors would be like, let's do an improv show just for fun, which is always a great time.
So when you were in high school, was that an official school club or you just knew people that got together and decided to do an improv?
We did have a drama club. I was actually president of the drama club my senior year. Yes.
Congratulations.
On the other hand, it was drama club in a public school system in Kentucky. So it's not like we had that much funding or was that elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
So the drama club was basically, yes, a lot of kids who just... the weird drama geeks that no one really understood, and we all just kind of band together and then would meet up once a week and just kind of practice, have fun. And then, yes, I did. I went through every acting class that was available in high school and ended up choreographing the school play junior year and was pretty much as heavily involved as I could possibly be whenever something fun or drama-y happened in high school, because it just wasn't... you put in what you got out of it. It was that type of thing, and I tried to really put in as much as I could so it would be fun for everybody.
So then, was this something that you really got into in high school, or you started performing even before that when you were really young?
I started performing before that. My first performance-based activity was dance class when I was 8 years old.
Okay. What type of dance?
Ballet, tap, and jazz.
Really?
Yes, the basics that all little kids, all little girls start in with their little tutus, ballet, tap, and jazz. The tap shoes from Walmart, you know, those fun things. That's how I got started. And I remember my first recital as little 8-year-old Marisha. And I just walked out on stage, and that was all she wrote for me. After that, I was hooked. I was done. So I remember being 8 years old, and I'm sure there's a diary entry somewhere hidden in the attic of my closet in Kentucky that's like, I always compared it to being on clouds. I was like, it's like being on clouds. You're on clouds because you're on this elevated stage and all the lights are shining on you, but you can't see past the lights. You can't see the audience. It's like clouds. So very unaware of the... probably numerous drug references I was making as my 8-year-old self. So yes, that was when I very first started performing, and dance turned into musical theater, which turned into getting introduced into acting classes when I was about 11. And then after I got introduced to acting, that was very much my home for me. That was when I was like, oh, okay. Like, I love dance. I still try and dance as much as I can today,
mm-hmm.
While still being able to pay the bills. But it was very much after acting, I was like, yes, this is where I'm going to be.
So you say you've kept up with dance just as a hobby, or like, have you, done any professional, like in a video or something?
I was a dancer. Are you familiar with the Nickelodeon show Victorious?
Yes.
With Victoria Justice?
Yes.
I was a dancer on the opening title sequence.
Oh, nice.
So, yes, they hired me. That was, like, probably the last professional dancing I did. That was, like, a year ago or so. So, definitely more. Once again, I was captain of my dance team in high school as well. So, I did dance team. And then went to college. And then it kind of got more, like, oh, this is the real world. I don't have time for this anymore. And I really missed it. And it actually wasn't not too long ago that I was like, you know what? This is bullshit. I want to dance again. And started like trying to take as many dance classes as possible when I could, when I had time, you know, and it was great. And I forgot how much I missed it. So I really do love it just as an art form and as a great form of exercise. And it just, it's a really, like, I remember being in college and I would go, because I went to a performing arts college, and you could rent out, or not really rent out, but you could reserve dance rooms. Mm-hmm. And I would reserve one of the dance rooms for like an hour after like a really bad day and would just go and like dance out all my frustrations.
Wow.
So it was like a really good, it's a good outlet for me.
Yeah,
but yes, I don't have the ankles or the knees to dance super professionally, but and acting is my main focus, but I will always have a love of dance and performing.
I want to ask about something, and I'm sorry if this is an indelicate question, but I didn't know you were a Kentucky native, or did you move there at a certain point?
Not an indelicate question at all. Yes, I was born and raised in Kentucky.
Okay, this is the indelicate part.
Okay.
You don't seem to have an accent.
Funny story. Okay, so I told you I started getting into acting when I was about 11.
Mm-hmm.
By 12, I started traveling to New York and traveling to various different states, like out of states, to do like camps, like intensives. And one of the first one I did was in upstate New York, and it was a 2-week intensive camp. So I started going away for long periods of time when I was 12 to work on acting. And when I was 14, I lived in New York for the summer and was going to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, their summer program. So I was in New York, so that was 2003, 2004, something of that nature.
I'm so old.
Lies, yeah. Lies. But yeah, so I was there for the summer, which was fantastic. I loved it. And while I was there, I got an agent. And the agency was great, and they started sending me out on a bunch of different auditions, Nickelodeon commercial. I remember I went out for like a Black & Decker commercial. And every job that I lost was because they came back and they were like, you're really great, you're really, really good, a really great stage presence, but your accent.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, and they were like, we just really need someone with a neutral, you know, they want neutral, Midwest style, very, very non-accent. And I was like, oh, yes. And I was actually taking speech class at the AADA for my summer there. And it definitely made me appreciate what my speech teacher, my voice and speech teacher was doing. And I definitely had very much, really start concentrating on it. And every time I go home to Kentucky, I'm like, oh God, it hurts! Every time someone opens their mouth. And I can now hear how atrocious it does sound. Not that it's bad, but kind of.
Yeah. So is it something that you have to be conscious of, or have you worked it out? It's like
I've pretty much worked it out. There's still, every once in a while a word will slip out and someone will catch me and be like, what did you just say? What was that? Also, if I get drunk, yes, it will start to slide out. Or if, once again, I talk to my mom on the phone for too long.
Okay.
Or if I visit home for a little bit. I have to be really conscious. I do remember this, though. I would, after I went away, I started coming back as a guest to my old high school and would teach, like, guest drama classes. And I would run warm-ups and things of that nature. And I remember everyone was in the warm-up circle, and we were going through our vowels. You know, A-A-A-A-A. B, 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 things of that nature, E, 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 I, I, I. And I remember stepping back and listening to the group as a whole, and it was A-A-A-A-A-B-B-B-B-B-I-I-I-I-E-E-E, and I was like, oh, oh, God, is that what I sounded like? So, yes, you don't hear it when you're immersed in it.
Right.
It's when you kind of step back and see it.
A little side question. Where in upstate New York did you go?
What was that town? I don't remember. It was a while. It was about an hour and a half north of Manhattan.
Oh, okay. So, all right. I just asked because that's where I went to college, was in northern New York. But you're talking like in the Buffalo area, probably.
Close that way, like kind of on the border of Vermont-ish area, going towards that way. I don't remember the name. It was a really kind of, because he rented out like a camp, like where people would go for summer camp. So it was kind of, I have no idea what the town was.
Okay. So you were saying that in high school you went through dance and then to musical theater and then pretty much to straight drama?
For the most part, yes. I continued to do a little bit of musical theater and took some voice lessons and singing lessons. And I quickly, here's a fun fact about me. I actually have severe stage fright when it comes to singing.
Oh, really?
I'm getting better. I'm learning. It's the one aspect that I'm not really comfortable in. I can get up in front of a crowd of, 800 people and bust out a Shakespearean monologue like nobody's business. You tell me to sing a musical number, and everything starts crumbling around me. I'm not confident in it, and I've been criticized a lot from various casting directors when I was really young about it, so I think that's where a lot of my insecurities come from. But I'm getting better, starting with karaoke.
There you go.
They
don't have a Broadway version of Rock Band, and they totally should.
They should. Oh man,
wouldn't that be awesome?
Do you think it would sell?
It'd be a niche market.
Maybe if it was downloadable content.
There you go. Yeah.
That's what it should be. But yes, that would be fun. But something, stuff like that, and I'm getting better. But yes.
Did you develop a fondness for any particular musical or show, or are there like soundtracks that you like?
Oh, sure, yeah. Avenue Q is one of my favorite musicals of all time. It's fantastic. Chicago was the very first musical I saw on Broadway. It was before the movie came out, mind you. And it's so good. The stage version is so good. I recommend everybody go see Chicago. Yeah, I know you've seen the movie, but go see it on stage. It's fantastic. It's very minimalistic. Mm-hmm. They don't have any set. The band is on the stage. And that's about it. And then they all wear the vaudevillian type of, outfits. And it's great. And it's a very good example of you don't need elaborate stage and cinematics, especially in good musical.
Exactly. It's got the plot and the score and the book all carried.
And the talent, when you have good talent.
Exactly. So you, in high school then, it sounds like, or even before that, you were really committed and you had decided that this is what your life was going to be.
Yes. Which was interesting. Made a lot of... Some people were very supportive. My biology teacher, sophomore year, was not. I started doing professional
theater.
She wanted
you to go into cytology or something?
Well, what happened was, like I said, I knew very quickly that this is what I was going to do, that there was nothing else for me. I do enjoy writing. I am actually actively writing right now. But acting is, that is where my heart is. And I started doing professional theater when I was 11, 12. I did the Nutcracker at the Louisville Ballet, which was my very first professional theater.
Oh, cool.
And then I started doing, I was doing the best Christmas pageant ever at Actors Theater of Louisville, which is a pretty renowned, theater company. And when I was doing Actors Theater of Louisville, through Christmas time, I would have to miss every other day of school because it's a children's show. And so we were doing field trip shows. We were doing shows during school days. And so we were all double cast. All the kids were double cast, and we would switch casts back and forth so that we weren't missing a month of school. But we were, all in all, we'd miss about 2.5 weeks of school, around that Christmas time. And I would have to leave biology class to go to my call time. And it was really pointless, and the only reason I did it was because my biology teacher was giving me such a hard time. But I would get up and I would go to about 30 minutes of biology class before I would have, it was my first class of the day, before I would have to leave and go do my performance. And she hated me for it. She hated every time I walked out that door. She was just, biology class was way more important. And she tried to fail me. It was pretty interesting. So it was kind of frustrating when I'm like, look, I'm not like cutting class. Like, I'm doing something good, and, you know, it's an extra curriculum, basically, and I'm getting punished for it, basically, because I'm missing your biology class, which is where a lot of, I'm a very big advocate of putting the arts in public schools, because I went through the whole No Child Left Behind Act, and I saw, in a very short time period, everything get pulled that wasn't based around reading, writing, and arithmetic. So we lost band, lost funding, art class lost funding, drama, all of it got pulled, all of it. And, I mean, it was like that scene in Matilda where the principal, what's his name?
I actually haven't seen that.
Oh, really?
No.
They would all, like, take down all their colorful posters and put it up with really bland ones. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
It's kind of, yeah, you don't, people take for granted just simple art when it's not, and, you know, and then the government literally came in. I remember, like, walking through halls, and there would be the black men in suits, and they were coming into our schools and changing stuff. Wow. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I'm a very big advocate for putting arts back into the public schools, because bottom line is, not everyone is a mathematician.
Yep.
Plus, there's a lot of, you can do a lot of learning through the arts.
Absolutely.
So it was frustrating, mm-hmm. but yes.
So did you have a support system in place at home? Like, was your family into the idea?
My family was very supportive, and they still are very supportive. They're actually coming into town in November.
Oh, that'd be nice.
It's going to be interesting.
I imagine
staying with me for a week.
Novembers in Los Angeles are better than the Novembers in Kentucky.
Yes. Yes, I would say so. Much warmer. But yes, my parents were always very supportive. You know, they let me go and do all the things and, you know, go to New York for the summer and things of that nature. So I was very blessed in that way.
Do you have any siblings maybe that were also artistically inclined or?
I have a little sister. And she is 10 years old.
Oh.
Yes, we are quite a bit apart. She was not expected, to say the least. She was a surprise. But yes, she's...
A delightful surprise, I'm sure.
She can be delightful. She's, we're really different personalities.
Oh, okay.
She's a pretty good writer, actually, and she's really good with music. She's like one of these kids, she'll sit down at the piano and just kind of hit keys, and I'm like, but that sounds pretty good, actually, and she'll just improv songs, so I really want her to go into music, but I don't know, she also is kind of sporty, she likes outdoors, I don't know, she's 10, we'll see which direction she goes, I guess, time will tell.
See, I had the opposite situation. I have two older sisters,
mm.
and they were both much more accomplished than me, like, academically and sports-wise, but I was always the one, you know, the big attention getter.
Right.
So they always say, oh, I could never go up on stage in front of people and do what you do. And I was like, well, yeah, but you're a doctor, so.
It's a fair trade-off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then what sort of shows did you do in high school? Like, did you do shows connect, like, in the community, or were you doing professional work at that time, or?
I did as much as possible. I did professional. I also went to an after-school dance and acting studio. Where I was do classes, and in our classes we would do scene study and also put on plays and stuff as well. So I did that, and then as well as trying to be as active as possible as I could in the high school, in my high school arts. And that was just like a, yeah, I just really want to show that this is important. We need this in our public school systems. This is good for our youth. And we have high school for we didn't do too bad for a little public school in Mount Washington, Kentucky. It wasn't too bad. We did one in my junior year of high school. We did this play called Addict. Mm-hmm. And it was a collection, it was a play that was a collection of monologues, kind of similar to the vagina monologues, but not, because it's not about vaginas. Anyways.
When you get right down to it, isn't everything?
Well, good point. Touché. Touché, my good friend. but yeah, it was called Addict, collection of monologues, and each monologue was based around a different drug, like a different drug addict. And at the end of the play, everyone dies. So it was really, really heavy. but good. And it got so much attention, we ended up doing the play like 2 and 3 times a day because it became, the school found out that we were doing this and it became required for every student in the student body to see the play. So we had to do enough plays for all the students to come and be able to see it. As well as other people, we started traveling around to schools and doing it for other schools because they saw like this huge importance about it. And it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was pretty heavy. I was like, man, I'm proud of us. Yeah. It was pretty nice.
I'm gonna guess you were either cocaine or heroin.
I was actually barbiturates.
Oh, okay.
Uppers and downers.
All right, then.
Yeah, that was me. I had the opening monologue. Nice. But we covered like LSD and heroin, cocaine. Yeah, it was pretty heavy. And so yeah, everyone has a monologue, and their monologue is basically speaking after death, and they're coming back and telling them how they died because of a drug overdose. So.
Did your biology teacher have any objections this time?
I don't know. I tried to avoid her after sophomore year.
Okay.
She was mean.
Yeah.
She was mean to me.
But so yes. I wanted to go back just briefly to something that you mentioned where you said that you got some discouraging comments from casting directors or casting people about your singing.
Yes. They weren't mean. They weren't mean per se. I just remember going in and auditioning for this musical, and of course you had to do a song a cappella. So I start singing and I can feel my throat start closing up out of nerves, and my voice is all shaky and crackly, and just got really, really nervous. And I got stopped like very shortly into my song. And the casting director was like, okay, thank you, we've heard enough, thank you. And I was just like, oh, that was bad, that was not good. And after that, I was like, okay, this is not my forte, this is not my realm.
Well, yeah, it's good to hear that you're coming around. The reason that I go back to that is because one of the things that I like to touch on with guests is about, like, you know, their formative experiences. And, you know, I had a similar thing where when I was younger, I had the musical director of my high school was aggressively not encouraging of my singing.
I see.
And so that had me convinced for a good long time that I couldn't sing.
Couldn't sing, yeah.
So, and it sounds like you maybe didn't have quite that bad a time, but...
It wasn't terrible, but it definitely... And, you know, it's always worse, too, when you're younger.
Yeah.
And those things hit you a lot more. But yeah, and you know, I've dealt with some pretty asshole-ish casting directors in my day,
yeah.
So,
Well, and it sounds like you were really good at making your own opportunities happen, so did you feel like you needed to sort of take control, and, or, like, were you trying to make sure that you got to do the kind of things you really wanted to do, or?
I definitely did take control, and I tried for a really long time, my senior year of high school. They started saying that they were going to do renovations in high school for after I left, and they were going to build a new library. Well, I tried really hard, like went to the school board and things of that nature, to get the library, the old library, turned into a black box theater, because our school was one of those that didn't have an auditorium. Mm-hmm. If we wanted to do shows, we would either move the bookshelves out of the way in the library, or our, like, gym had, like, a stage and did the whole, like, let's make folding chairs and on the gym floor and exactly.
Yeah.
Not very nice. So I was like, this would be so awesome to just take a corner of the library that you're not going to use anyway and turn it into a black box theater, and that didn't happen. But yes, yeah, so I very much, you know, and still to this day, you know, if there isn't work, if you're not getting cast, then make your own work. And I've learned it took me a while to kind of realize that here in LA. But after that happened, as soon as I started kind of like being like, oh no, wait, I don't have to rely on a casting director to make my career. I can do this myself even here in LA. And as soon as I started like making my own work, I immediately started getting recognized more, and people see that initiative that you put into it, and it's automatically tenfold more appealing, makes yourself more appealing when you have that go get 'em type of attitude.
Okay. So you mentioned that you went to performing arts college.
Yes.
I am curious as to what like the audition and admissions process is like for that kind of a
grueling.
Scenario. Yeah.
Grueling. Are you interested in a story?
Yeah,
funny story. Yes, I did two. They're called unified auditions, and it's where all the top schools, performing arts schools, will arrange to get together into one place, and you can do just one massive audition.
And does this take place in a particular, like regional, or is it nationwide, or?
They'll do several in different regions.
Okay.
I did one in Louisville, and that was not necessarily like the top schools, just some of the more middle-ish ones, I guess. There was a few top schools there. And the way they did that is I did two monologues just once through, and all 30 schools were in the same room. So you were auditioning for all 30 schools at once. The other time I did it was up in Chicago, and they were all there in like the same hotel, but you had scheduled auditions, and so you auditioned for them one at a time, individually. The first time I did it, when it was in Louisville, I kind of wasn't. It was such an interesting day. That entire day, I was waiting all day. I was kind of like feeling a little bit under the weather, but it was like January and freezing cold, so I just figured it was, you know, maybe a little bit of cold symptoms. Was with a few of my friends. I had about an hour before my audition. So they were like, hey, you want to walk across the street to the Starbucks to get some coffee? I'm like, yeah, as long as I get actually something hot. Went there. It was a Starbucks that was in the Louisville, University of Louisville's library. While we were there, we were all sitting, kind of socializing a little bit, the fire alarms go off, which, cue the sprinklers.
Mm.
And the sprinklers, I guess from where water had been sitting in them for so long, started spewing thick, black, metallic-y smelling water. And I was wearing an ice cream shirt.
Wait. You were wearing an ice cream shirt?
I was wearing a... No. after that, it could potentially look very ice creamy or just awful. No, it was a cream-colored shirt.
Oh, I see.
Yes. And, yes, a black rain of metallic-y shower down me. This was literally like 45, 30 minutes before I had to go in for this massive audition. I was like, really? Really? Okay. Went back. It gets better. Went back to where I was auditioning. Kind of looked in the mirror. Was like asking other people, like, do you have a brush? Because I was like, I had black stuff dripping down my face. So trying to clean it up as much as possible. Literally had stains on my shirt when I went in for this audition. And I was like, okay, I've cleaned up as much as I can. Like, there's nothing I can do. Went into the audition. Was really amped up on adrenaline, clearly, after all of this. I did a monologue from Steel Magnolias. Mm-hmm. And then I did a monologue from Othello. I did Desdemona. Did the monologues. Walked out of the room. And collapsed. Turns out I had 103 fever, and was right in the peak of mono.
Oof.
Throughout all of this. I ended up being one of the top, like, three people that got called back for the most schools out of everybody. It was one of the best auditions I've ever done in my life. And I was dying. So I don't know if it was everything that just kind of fueled that, and, like, I said, so much adrenaline going, I just felt awful. And yeah, I collapsed and had to like go to the doctor. And they were like, oh, you've got like 103 degree fever. One of the best auditions I ever did. In Chicago, I went a month later, it was February. It was one of the coldest winters Chicago had had in a long time. It was 40 degrees below zero. And I had had one of the worst head colds of my life. That audition process did not go so well.
No.
You do not sound great doing Shakespeare sounding like, I don't even, like a cartoon character. Like, just so nasally, it was awful. But I tried. But yes, I did.
So where did you end up going?
I ended up going to Point Park University in Pittsburgh. They gave me a decent scholarship, and they picked me up in Louisville after that audition. I was only there for about a year, though, and I left. I was not particularly a fan.
Okay. Do you want to go into that at all, or would that be undiplomatic?
I don't know. What do you think?
It's up to you. We can talk about it. You can not. I guess what I'm getting at is eventually you decided for whatever reason to come to Los Angeles.
I did.
So what was the time frame like there?
Well, what actually ended up happening is I got into school, and my current agent out here in Los Angeles, I did like a big kind of talent search type of thing. Mm-hmm. My agent found me there, picked me up, and was like, come to L.A. He was like, I can't do anything with you if you're out here, but if you come to L.A., I can get you work. He told me this 2 weeks before I was about to go into school, and right after I had written them a check for $10,000. Mm. So I was like, okay, well...
And how old are you at this time?
18.
18, okay.
Yes, 18. I was like, well, will that offer still stand in, say, a year? Because I just wrote a check for college. And he was like, yeah, absolutely, you know, just know if you ever come out to LA, call me, and I'll sign you. And I was like, okay. And I did a monologue for him and everything when I auditioned for him. So went to school and I had kind of had this the mindset of if this doesn't work out, fuck it, I'm going to LA, you know?
Right.
And, it was not, college isn't for everybody, you know, and being someone, and this is not me tooting my own horn at all, it was just, I'd been acting since I was 11, and done the AADA, and traveled, and, you know, performed on cruise ships, and all this stuff, and I was going to school, and was in class with people who had nothing more than their level one drama class in high school, and it was very slow, and I was like, wait, I'm paying $30,000 a year? For this? Okay. It was very political, and Pittsburgh is awful. I'm sorry, Pittsburgh. I love you.
Yeah, I'm from Cleveland.
I hate
you.
You
don't have to tell me.
Yes, do you know? Yeah, when 9 months out of the year are completely gray and overcast, it really takes a toll on you. It really does. But yeah, so I didn't really like it, and it was just really slow for me, and I was like, you know what? I can always come back to school. So I actually took a leave of absence, which lasts 3 years, where I can still come back and my place is still there and still have my scholarship and everything. I didn't go back though.
Okay.
I stayed here. And it was great. It was the best decision I ever made. I don't regret it at all.
I have a question about, you said you did a monologue for your agent as well?
Yes.
Was it one of the two that you'd done at your other auditions, or?
It was not, actually. This is also kind of a funny story. when you're doing the talent search that I went into, it was a modeling and acting talent search. And they give you a list of commercials that you can read, that you can memorize and read for the agents. Or, they say, you can make your own commercial and write your own commercial and perform it. Well, I knew that everybody else was going to be doing this, like, really terrible McDonald's McGriddle commercial that I didn't give a shit about. And I was like, no, okay, I'm going to write my own.
Yeah, well, we just earned our explicit tag.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Carry on.
Should have.
I don't give a fuck. Go ahead.
Comedy.
You said screw McGriddles. You're going to write
Screw McGriddles. I'm going to write my own. And I ended up writing one. I made up a product. And it was for the Schick Dodeca Quattro Trilicon, which is the new razor from Schick with 16 blades. And I actually built a Schick Dodeca Quadrilicon. And I got a bunch of those, like, plastic disposable razors that you get in a bag of, like, 20. Mm-hmm. And me and my dad built it, and we, like, made an extended handle. We'd, like, put two handles together and then popped a bunch of the heads off of the razors.
Right.
And then stacked them all on top of each other and glued them. So I had this razor that was, like, 3 feet. Like, no, probably not 3 feet at all, but probably a good, you know, 6 inches long of a razor.
Was it a blue one or a pink one?
It was pink.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. See, that makes a little more sense.
Yeah. And I kept it in my back pocket and, like, hid it from them so they couldn't see it. And it wrote the commercial, and it was all... But how did it go? Some of it was like, ladies, don't you just love a man with a smooth-shaved face? Well, you need to tell your man to get the new Schick Dodeca Quadrilicon. And when I pulled it out, I kind of revealed it from my back pocket, and it got a nice eruption of laughter. They laughed so much, actually, that I didn't end up finishing the commercial. Okay. Because they kept laughing. And it worked out nicely.
Yeah.
Gotta be my agent, so.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I asked that is because I'm always curious about what influences the selection of an audition piece. So you mentioned a monologue from Steel Magnolias and mm-hmm. Othello. Did you just think that those ones suited your personality, or do you have a special fondness for those works, or what influenced that?
Yeah, picking a monologue, it will always be one of the hardest things to do, because you got to find one that does kind of suit not only your personality but your type. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much a believer in go ahead and play into your type. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, if you're typecast, great. It means you're probably going to work more than everybody else. There's nothing wrong with having a type. So yeah, definitely playing into your type and your strengths as an actor. So the Steel Magnolias one, I go into my native Southern accent. You know, it's Southern monologue. And I also don't believe in doing accents in your monologue unless you can really actually do them, or if it's natural to you. And that was my contemporary, more comedy one. And then the Desdemona from Othello. Just really, really deep. And it's just finding a monologue, it'll just click. You're just like, yes, this one. And I'll see actors do ones that I've gone through and been like, oh, this monologue's shitty. I don't want to do that. And then I'll see another actor do it, and I'll be like, oh my God, it's fantastic. It's great. Wasn't for me, it was great. And then once you find a monologue, I say work it, stick with it. Don't have 8 different monologues, you know, have 2 really good ones or 3 really good ones. You know, I have 3. So yes. Okay. I have 4. I'm sorry, I apologize. I have 4. So 2 kind of contemporary, 1 comedic, 1 dramatic, and then 2 classic kind of comedic and dramatic.
I did want to touch on something about typecasting, and again, I apologize if this is an undiplomatic question, but you're an attractive young woman. Do you ever feel like, you know, people are trying to pigeonhole you? Look, you're just the pretty girl, just stand there and people will react. Don't try and be funny or that kind of thing? Does that ever happen? Because I don't know what it's like to be a pretty girl.
Yeah. I do. Probably the thing I get sent out most for is, like, the girl next door. You know, that kind of thing. Which is fine. And I also go out a lot for the whole, like, the ditzy kind of naive girl next door. A lot of the, oh, you're so cute. You know, kind of that thing. So I play dumb a lot. I'm not sure what that's saying.
Is that
Anyways,
frustrating? Anyways,
it's not super frustrating. Like I said, I'm totally like, hey, you know, yes, if you want me to be in your production and you're going to pay me, heck yeah, I'll be your ditzy girl. I can do it. But I do also try, you know, and I have on my real dramatic pieces, you know, and also some that are more like really character-y or action-y, you know, because yes, I look like the girl next door, but I feel like people sometimes get blocked by your appearance and they can't look past it. And I'm like, look, throw my hair up in a ponytail and put some like black eyeliner on me in a black suit, and I can totally be an action hero. You know, but people get blocked a little bit by the vision, I think. So that's why I also believe if we're going to go into an audition and it's for something, you know, say you're going into an audition for like a white trash girl, dress it, play into it. You need to throw it in their face. I think the days of going in there completely neutral are over, especially when there's so much competition, you know, and which is also why I think you should also have some character-y headshots as well, because we live in an era where people have a lack of creativity. You know, you have to show it to them in order. And I'm not saying casting directors are not creative people. Clearly they are. They're in this industry. They wouldn't have their jobs if they're not. But the more you kind of throw it in their face, it's going to be just easier for them to visualize. So I do. I dress for when I go into auditions, I dress towards the audition. Maybe not necessarily as extreme as you could take it, but I definitely throw some hints in there. So it just, they don't have to use their imagination, you know, and they can see it.
Okay. Do you have a favorite play that you've been in or a favorite part that you've played?
Oh, that's a good one. In college, I did Danny and the Deep Blue Sea, which is a two-person, two-act play. And I was Roberta. And Roberta was, and I still use the monologue. She was great because she's just a really, really screwed up person. She's just really messed up in the head. And that's fun to me, you know. It's acting. We're playing here, you know. And it's fun to be someone who you're not. And Roberta, not to get too graphic, but her whole psychosis, she's really messed up because she controls her dad, or has this control over them from where she gave her father oral pleasure, to be PC. She's dealing with that, the fact that she gave her dad a blowjob. And that's where a whole lot of, she's a young mother, she had, you know, a kid when she was super young, and then Danny, who's the other person in the play, is also just a really, really messed up person. So, and it takes place in a bar where you have two just really fucked up individuals who bond with each other over the fact that they're basically just really messed up. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. And I found accomplishments in the fact that after I would finish it, people would be like, I don't like seeing you like that. It's weird. And I'm like, yes. Yeah. Like that. Okay. If I'm making you uncomfortable, then that means I've done my job. You know, people are like, I don't like it. I was like, okay, well, cool. Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
You don't have to come back again.
Right.
Probably the best compliment I ever got on a performance was a buddy of mine came and saw me in this one play. And afterward he said, yeah, when I was watching it, I forgot that I knew you.
So yeah, see, there you go.
That was really cool.
Exactly.
Is there any role or play that you can think of that you've never gotten to do that you'd really like to do?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I love this. Dream role question.
Yeah.
On theater, Abigail from The Crucible.
Oh. Wait, refresh my memory. Is she the main character's wife, or is she the bad girl who lies?
She's the bad girl who lies, like kind of in
I saw Goody Proctor with the devil.
Exactly, yes. That's Abigail. Yeah, she's the one who's like sitting around, like hovering over the candle, playing with the fire, and speaking
pretends
in
to see the bird.
Right,
oh, okay.
Yes. She's the one who's really, once again, she's really messed
girl.
Up
yeah.
and kind of is ruining Goody Proctor's life and John Proctor. So yes, that's Abigail. I would love to do her. And The Crucible is just great. Anyway, The Crucible is a great, great show. Also, from a nerdy standpoint, this is happening in my nerd side, guys, nerd side. I would love to play Poison Ivy on screen. I would love to. I'm throwing it out there. One of these days.
Now, this doesn't necessarily say that. I know you've done a goodly amount of cosplay.
Yes.
Have you ever cosplayed Poison Ivy?
I have.
Okay.
I have, yes. And I actually, there's a Batman fan film out right now from Bat in the Sun Productions. You guys should check it out. It's really great. And it's Seeds of Arkham.
Oh.
And I was actually up for Poison Ivy for that role. And didn't get it.
Oh.
But I'm still hopeful one of these days. Really great fan film, though. And I, like, it doesn't have to be a major motion picture for me.
Right.
To, I just want to do it. You know, I don't, it doesn't have to be Chris Nolan that I'm working with.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would just love to do it. I've always loved Poison Ivy. Always have.
Now, when you say always, like, what was your first exposure to her? Was it, Batman the Animated Series came out in 92.
Yes,
or
which was great.
Like, or did you like Uma Thurman in the movie?
I did not like Uma Thurman. It wasn't Uma's fault.
Yeah.
I gotta
say, I think she's the only one that really gets it in that one. I mean, she just goes all out cartoon.
Yes. Yeah, she definitely is. I mean, and even Joel Schumacher has come back to this day and has been like, there was a lot of things that happened that I didn't really have control over, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Joel Schumacher has come back and been like, I know. I know.
Yeah.
Uma Thurman, yeah, it wasn't even that she was necessarily bad. It's just she wasn't... The whole movie was
bad.
Yeah,
the material was working with a really weak material.
Exactly.
But, I mean, she went for it. I do like her in that movie.
That's, she did. But yes, I was, you know, exposed to Poison Ivy in the comic books and stuff before that, so... Yes.
Now, you did a Desdemona monologue. Mm-hmm. Are you particularly well-versed with Shakespeare? This is something I like to ask all my classically trained...
Yes. I'd say more so than others, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of these people who have read through his entire collective works. But definitely, I love Shakespeare in the Park. And I think people get intimidated by Shakespeare from the language. It's really not as difficult as people make it out to be, especially if you have great performers. You know, if you have great performers who do use the iambic pentameter system and... know where the inflections are supposed to be and the emphasis, you can totally get it, you know, without thinking. And Shakespeare's also hilarious, you know? And I think people, once again, like they said, they get freaked out about it. They get a little like, I don't know, it's going to give me a headache, I'm going to be confused the whole time. But it's not, especially if people who live in New York, go to Shakespeare in the Park. It's free. It's awesome. And I used to go to Shakespeare in the Park in Louisville, and also fantastic. And you don't have to think about it. You know, it's just like watching regular play. If you have great performers who understand it, you're gold.
Have you ever done a full production, or are you just...
Not a full Shakespeare production. I've done, for a scene study, I did a decent amount of Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
Which was a lot of fun.
Which
really
part?
Great performance. Oh, God, now I'm blinking. Oh, well, this looks great. Helena. Helena.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Sorry, Helena. Yes, so that was fun. It was all the lovers' quarrels. We kind of spliced all the lovers' quarrels down together, and it was about 15, 20 minutes. So almost like a condensed version of Midsummer Night's Dream. But yes, and that was a blast. And I love As You Like It as well. It's one of my favorites.
So if you were going to pick one to be in, is that the one you'd pick, or like... particular Shakespeare
that
role
or probably
that you'd like to do?
Taming of the Shrew.
Mm-hmm.
Taming of the Shrew is great.
Do you think it's possible to do that show nowadays, though, without irony?
Without thinking of Heath Ledger?
Well, I was just meaning in terms of, like, in the post-feminist
right,
mindset,
right.
Yeah.
I think it's possible.
Yeah.
I think a lot of things get mistaken for feminism. When they're not supposed to be, because it is unfortunate, and I am the first person who talked. I'm so frustrated when it comes to feminism; it drives me nuts. I'm not a feminist, but on the other hand, I'm also very much of like, no, a woman can, you know, doesn't have to stay at home and raise a kid. She can work too, especially in today's era where you have to have, you know, two working members of the household. But we're women.
Yeah.
We have particular DNA, just natural things that we got to do. Deal with it.
With that in mind, this kind of goes back to sort of the typecasting thing. And again, if this is something that's too personal, you don't want to talk about it, that's cool. But has anyone, a casting agent, say, ever approached you with like a, you know, pay-to-play offer? Like... Have you ever encountered it, like a casting couch situation? Have you had that problem?
Yeah, kind of. Yes. One of the first things I did actually out here was I got approached by this guy who was doing a radio show. Mm-hmm. And it was very like Howard Stern, but if Howard Stern, like Howard Stern meets Playboy Mansion, like, and I would have been like the red headed arm candy, like hot chick. It wasn't like, he wasn't asking for sexual favors, but it was a fairly kind of...
It was going to be exploitative?
Yes, okay. Exactly, type of role. Other than that, I have had people come up to me, casting directors, ask if I had ever considered doing porn.
Well, I'm sorry to bring you out to the valley for this recording. We're a stone's throw from Chatsworth.
It's not a worry. Okay. But yes, I have also, from where, like, I'm on Model Mayhem and things of that nature, had people message me and been like, should you be interested in taking your clothes off? I'm like, no, I'm good, thank you. Not that I have a problem with that, just not me.
Okay. And again, I apologize if it's an indelicate question.
No, not at all.
So we're getting close to the end, and I always like to give my guests the opportunity to promote themselves and, you know, their online presence and their upcoming project. Where can people see you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter. Twitter! It's at Marisha_Ray. So it's MARISHA_RAY. And yeah, I'm always tweeting stuff out. Other than that, I'm in a web series called 813, which is a zombie web series.
And that's kind just the numerals 813.
8.13, yes. Okay. And it's a zombie drama thriller kind of thing. But it's different from other zombie series or movies, where they really focus really hard on the zombies. This is like, she took our producer, who's Tracy King, who's amazing, and our creator. She took three different, very different groups of people, and we follow them throughout the apocalypse, and it's very much like the psychology of how people put in this apocalyptic situation would react. Mm. So yes, there are zombies, but it's focused on people, which it's really fun. And we are getting ready to start filming the second half of season one. So it should be out soon. And you can go, we do have a teaser trailer out right now. So just, it's 813. It's on YouTube, 813. Or you can go to 813series.com, and it's on there as well. Other than that, I'm also in a series, really fun series called Game Room, which is from the... It's a really short, really, like, non-episodic series, and it all takes place from the viewpoint of the Microsoft Kinect.
Okay.
So you're watching us, like, from the Kinect's viewpoint, and it's all based around gaming and dealing with the Kinect, and it's a lot of fun. And each episode's, like, a minute and a half to 2.5 minutes. So they're really short and all silly and slapsticky. But that's also on YouTube, and it's at... Watch Game Room is the channel.
Okay.
And then, yeah, if you just Google, like, Game Room series, it'll pop up pretty quickly. But it's fun. Nice. Fun little quips.
And I know you've done episodes of the web series Balls at Crave.com.
Yes.
You've been in that every once in a while.
Yes, and I'm also just started writing for Crave Online in the comedy section.
Oh, terrific.
So I'm a... comedic writer for Crave Online.
Okay. Are you performing live around town anywhere these days?
Not here recently, but I do want to get like another improv troupe situation. I miss improv.
Yeah, me too.
We need to get that going again.
Yeah.
We can do that. I miss it. I've been wanting to get back into it. It's great outlet. Putting it out there.
Man, and I didn't even ask about what drew you to improv in the first place. Like, did...
Oh.
What made you decide when you got to L.A. to check out L.A. Connection, for example? Or did you have any improv experience before that?
I did have improv experience before that. Like I said, I hadn't really performed regularly with the troupe. Mm-hmm. But I did have improv experience. And I actually... It was like a New Year's resolution goal of mine. Of me being like... I want to like get back into like a class. Like improv. And then literally the next day I saw like the posting for LA Connections. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Yeah. And I went in and it was good. I got what I did out of it, which you can. Siphoned all that I could and it was great. And it's fun, and what's great about LA Connections is that you don't have to go there for 2 years before you even get a chance to get on stage. Because right. I think a lot of experience and learning comes from performing and being in front of people. And you get to do that within, like, what, 3 or 4 weeks
yeah,
at LA
like
Connections.
That.
So that's definitely what I like about LAC. Cool.
So. All right. Well, Marisha Ray, thank you so much. It's been a delight having you here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having
me. I appreciate you making
the
drive to the Valley.
Yeah, not a worry.
All right. And you know, hopefully people will find you online and you'll just blow up from here.
And then, yes, I will owe you everything.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Rush up here, Shakespeare, and they'll all bow, bow, they'll all bow.